Thank you. All glories to the Sumo devotees. All glories to the Sumo devotees. All glories to the Sumo devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. All glories to Sri Prabhupada. Anyone like to suggest a verse, perhaps? Or shall I just choose one? Third. Chapter 9. Text 1. Okay. That's nice. Well, we can do chapter 9, texts 13 and 14, perhaps. If they do go together. Very nicely. So, Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, chapter 9, The Most Confidential Knowledge, text 13. Mahatmanas tu mam parita. Daivim prakritim ashrita vijantyananyam manaso gyatva bhutadim avyayam. O son of Prita, those who are not deluded, the great souls, are under the protection of the divine nature. They are fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible. So that's verse 13. Let me just read a little bit of the purport, then I'll read text 14 also. So here, Srila Prabhupada comments, in this verse, the description of the Mahatma is clearly given. The first sign of the Mahatma is that he's already situated in the divine nature. He's not under the control of material nature. And how is this effected? That is explained in the 7th chapter. One who surrenders unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, at once becomes freed from the control of material nature. That is the qualification. One can become free from the control of material nature as soon as he surrenders his soul to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the preliminary formula. As soon as the living entity is freed from the control of material nature, he is put under the guidance of the spiritual nature. The guidance of the spiritual nature is called Daivi Prakriti, divine nature. So when one is promoted in that way, by surrendering to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one attains to the stage of great soul, Mahatma. The Mahatma does not divert his attention to anything outside Krishna, because he knows perfectly well that Krishna is the original Supreme Person, the cause of all causes. There is no doubt about it. Such a Mahatma or great soul develops through association with other Mahatmas, pure devotees. They meditate only upon Krishna and Krishna consciousness. They're always engaged in the unswerving service of the Lord in Krishna consciousness. So let me read text 14 or so. Satatam kirtiyanto ma yadantascha dridha vrata namasyantas chamam bhaktya nitya yukta upasate. Now this is following on from the verse that we just read, just taking the same point another step further, by describing, giving a little detail about what the Mahatmas are like, what the great souls are like. So, translation. Always chanting my glories, endeavoring with great determination, bowing down before me. These great souls perpetually worship me with devotion. So let us again read a little bit of the purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Mahatma cannot be manufactured by rubber stamping an ordinary man. His symptoms are described here. A Mahatma is always engaged in chanting the glories of the Supreme Lord Krishna, the Personality of Godhead. He has no other business. He is always engaged in the glorification of the Lord. In other words, he is not an impersonalist. When the question of glorification is there, one has to glorify the Supreme Lord, praising his holy name, his eternal form, his transcendental qualities, and his uncommon pastimes. One has to glorify all these things. Therefore, a Mahatma is attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then a few words to encourage us all. See, you can become a Mahatma. Right? Yes, anyone can become a Mahatma. Of course, it's not just, you know, we don't want to cheapen it. And just, you know, like any silly person can become a Mahatma. But any serious person can. That's true. That's true. Man, woman, old, young. It's really these considerations, they're not important. But anyone who's doing these things, just like what we're reading, they can become a Mahatma. And then, just as I said, some words of encouragement from Srila Prabhupada, as described in the second verse of this chapter. Not only is this devotional service easy, but it can be performed in a happy mood. One does not need to undergo any severe penance and austerity. He can live this life in devotional service, guided by a spiritual master, and in any position, either as a householder or a sannyasi, or a brahmachari, in any position and anywhere in the world, he can perform this devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and thus become actually Mahatma, a great soul. So, anyone can do it, and you can do it. Of course, as we said, we don't want it to be taken cheaply, and then we think, oh yes, I'll become a Mahatma, why not? And, you know, in some sort of, like insincere way or immature way, we try to assume that role, as Prabhupada says here, a rubber stamp. Someone comes along with a rubber stamp that says Mahatma, and they just go, they come up to you and just go, boom. So now, Mahatma. So what does that mean? What's that mean? Yeah. But it's something within the heart, really. Let me just read these two verses again, just the verses. Mahatma anastamam parta, daivam prakritamachita, vajanchinanya manaso gyatva bhutadim avyaya. O son of Prita, O Arjuna, those who are not deluded, the great souls, are under the protection of the divine nature. They're fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible. Satatam kiryanta mam yatatascha jathavrita namasyantascha mam bhaktya nitya yukta upasate. Always chanting my glories, endeavoring with great determination, bowing down before me, these great souls perpetually worship me with devotion. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Well again, it's so nice to be here with you all, and thank you all for coming. It's really nice when the family, you know what they say, the family that prays together stays together. But I didn't hear them say that the family that watches the bold and the beautiful together stays together. I don't know what happens to them. That's Western life, isn't it? I was reading somewhere, a while ago, maybe a year ago, that by the time a child reaches the age of about 13 or something, you know, in a typical house where the TV is on the main altar, then by the time the child, how old are you? 15. By the time the child becomes his age, then they've seen on TV, you know, something like a few thousand people murdered and, you know, all sorts of other things. Raped and beaten up and swearing and cursing and, you know, all this sort of thing. It's not so good. One of our devotees actually wrote a play. And in the play, some archaeologists, you know, these people who dig into the ground and find the old ruins of the old cities and the pots and artifacts and all that. So, but this is in the future, maybe in the year 3001 or something. They were digging in the ground, in this old area which previously had been inhabited, called Chatsworth. Or Queensborough, if you like, but somewhere around. And they're digging. And they found a TV sitting on a table. in some ruined house which was now underground, covered over by the effect of time. So I'm trying to figure out now, what is this box doing here in the middle of the main room? Then one of the archaeologists, he said, I know. This is the focal point of their religion. The family members would come every night and sit in front of it and meditate. And they all thought, a revelation. Anyway, probably a few of you are TV fans, so we don't want to sort of get too negative about it. But this is my stuff, actually. This is my stuff. You know, I've been doing this nearly 30 years now. And, you know, I haven't sat down at night and watched TV for about 30 years. And, you know, I honestly don't feel that I miss much. I think I'm a lot happier. Just generally better off for it. So here, though, here, Krishna's describing the Mahatma. We're all, I think, familiar with this term, Mahatma. Were you there at the tent campaign in Maybank where we read these verses?
Yeah.
Oh, you were? Where we read these verses? Ah, okay. How was that? Was it okay? So here, we've all heard this term, Mahatma. Particularly Mahatma Gandhi. Everyone knows that term. It's not something different or difficult or unusual. So Mahatma, though, here, Lord Krishna, this is Bhagavad Gita. This was spoken 5,000 years ago. You know, Mahatma Gandhi, he was living when he died. When was it? 51, I think, something like that. It was about 50 years ago. Just right around the time I was born, he died. So, but this was spoken 5,000 years ago. Lord Krishna is giving a type of definition. What is a Mahatma? What is really a great soul? Yes, so, what's a great soul? A great soul, spiritually advanced person, according to the description given by Lord Krishna. It's someone who's under the protection and who's working under the spiritual nature, not just under the material nature. Working under the spiritual nature means that, well, actually goes on to say, that they're fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as the Supreme Lord, the original person, the inexhaustible person. That's Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the Mahatmas, they're under the protection of the divine nature. In the previous verse, actually, because we don't have too many verses, but in the previous two verses, it talks about people who are not Mahatmas. In fact, they're the opposite. There's Mahatma means great soul, and then there's different terms for people who are not Mahatmas, who are like the opposite. One is Kripana. Kripana. Mahatma means great soul, very broad-hearted. Broad-minded. But Kripana means very narrow-minded. The Mahatma, his heart, is so great, so big, can fit the whole world in. But the Kripana, the narrow-minded person, is like a miserly and mentally miserly person also. That very narrow-minded person, within his heart, there's only room for one person. That's himself, of course. And other people may find a place there, but only if they please him. So it still comes down to the same point. There's only one person within his heart. Yes. And others, they may be there, but only as conveniences to help him and to please him. So we don't want to be like that. Or else, also it's called Duratma. Mahatma, great heart, great soul. And Duratma means hard-hearted. And the same sort of thing like narrow-minded. So Krishna says in the previous two verses, fools deride me when I descend in the human form. They do not know my transcendental nature as the Supreme Lord of all that be. And then he talks about their minds. Those who are thus bewildered are attracted by demonic and atheistic views. In that deluded condition, their hopes for liberation, their fruit of activities, and their culture of knowledge are all defeated. So Krishna's really speaking very strongly. So we don't want to be like that. It's interesting. These people, the particular word is Mohinim, two words, Mohinim Ashrita. They've taken shelter of illusion. The illusory energy, material energy. But the Mahatmas, they have taken shelter of Divine Prakritim Ashrita, the divine nature. Yes. And the divine nature, the divine energy, inspires them to serve Krishna and glorify Krishna and always focus on Krishna. But the material energy, that illusory energy, which is the energy of the become attracted by demonic and atheistic views. They actually become attracted by these things. Yes. Lower things. So then their lives revolve around those lower things. But we don't want to become like that. Of course, you know, to become a Mahatma, a truly great soul, that is not so easy. You know, it doesn't happen just like that. But at least, if we follow the standards which Krishna is giving here, then we can become gradually, we can advance spiritually. And in this way, if we can advance spiritually, then we can improve ourselves. We can become better people. The quality, our qualities as individuals will become better. The quality of our lives will become better. The quality of our families and the atmosphere within our families will become better. And the end result of all that will be that we'll all be much happier. Much, much happier. People think in this consumer society. I was reading someone was telling me how in America now, apparently, I mean, you, if you're sort of in the business world and all that, some of you might know a lot better than me. In America right now, they are a little bit in anxiety because apparently the economy is down. So they want people to spend more and consume more. So they're reducing some taxes, he said, and reducing the interest rates so people will now spend more. And the economy will become boosted. There'll be more money around. And what is the end result? You put an equal sign there, happiness. If people can consume more, buy more, you know, instead of having one TV, have one in each room. Yes. Instead of having one microwave, get two. Get an electric toothbrush. And really, you know, that's pretty high class. So, consumer society. The more you can gratify your senses, the equation is, the happier you'll be. And, you know, a way of looking at that, a practical example is that if I have, say, two rotis, and you have 200 rotis, you should be 100 times happier than me. Yes. Yes. If it's like that, you consume more, you get more things. Of course, we need a certain amount to keep our lives going in a balanced way. That's there. But when we talk about really consuming, getting things, and all that sort of thing. So the idea is, the more you get, the more you have, then proportionately, the happier you'll be. So if I have two rotis, or if I have three rotis, and you have 300, you should be 100 times happier than me. But I don't know if anyone would like to do an experiment. You know, I can manage my two rotis. So let us see, or three perhaps. Let's see how you do with your 300. Perhaps you will die before you finish them. Or if you don't die, if you do make it, then you'll probably be very sick. So this is the principle. Have you thought about it like this? That in many people's minds, like I've seen here in South Africa, it's like that a bit. It's like that a bit among some people. I go to Russia. There they were in poverty for a few generations. Now, you know, everything is opened up. So they have this idea. We must get things. We must get things. And more things. And more. And they are feeling that the more you get, the bigger house, the more TVs, motor cars, and flashy clothes, and all these sorts of things, then proportionately, equivalently, the happier you will be. But like we said, if I have three rotis, say, and you have 300, I will be okay, but you may die, or at best, you'll be very sick. You'll be very sick. So this is the point, that if people get into this consumer consciousness, just accumulating material things, and they think that this is how we're going to achieve happiness, and the more we get, the more happiness we'll have. But actually what happens is they end up sick, in a sense. Yes. They end up sort of sick, you know, up there. Yes, they end up sick. An imbalanced life, an extravagant life, without a higher perspective, without a higher goal, simply more comforts, and so on and so forth. Then it undermines the real platform of happiness. And as a result, they become sick, spiritually sick. Yes. Just inundated and bombarded, surrounded by all these material things, but they are not actually any happier. Not really happier. So here, Krishna is explaining about the Mahatmas, the great souls. So, of course, we're not necessarily suggesting that you can become, you know, Mr. Gandhi number two and be a Mahatma like that. But if we try to follow these principles which the Mahatmas, the great souls, are applying in their lives, then at least we can become somewhat elevated and somewhat advanced and purify our lives and cleanse our hearts and uplift ourselves in meaningful ways, and in this way become happy, become very, very happy. And that, of course, ultimately that's what people want. Why are they getting all those things? The ultimate idea really is they would like happiness, but they're looking in the wrong place. They think that happiness means you get more and more of these things and better facilities, bigger house, so on like this. But they're looking in the wrong place for happiness. It is not really there. Otherwise, you know, America would be full of a lot of happy people. But they're having a rough time there. They're having a hard time. Social imbalances and delinquency amongst the young people, the school children. It's bizarre. It's very bizarre. You know, I was in New York, well, about 3 or 4 years ago. We went to do a program in a high school. Just like we have schools around here. High school, maybe several hundred or 1,000 young people. So we walked in. And it was in Long Island. I don't know if you've ever been to that part of the world. Long Island. It's sort of like Reservoir Hills or Westville. It's a very good area. You know, every house there, if you convert the price to rand, you won't find a house for less than maybe 1.5 to 2 million rands. Of course, things are more expensive there. That's another thing. But it's a good area, you know, by material standards. It's a very good area. So we went to the high school to do the program. We walked in. There's one notice board. There are a few posters and different announcements. There's one big poster. Are you addicted to some type of drug? Phone this number. So we thought, oh, must be going on there. So, you know, therefore they're addressing it. We walked a little further, just another 25 meters. Another notice board. Another big sign. Are you pregnant? Phone this number. Sort of, you know, got a diverse lifestyle here, these youngsters. Walked on another 25 meters. Another notice board. Are you suicidal? Phone this number. And then we walked on a little further. There was another one, I forget what that was saying, but some other thing of that type. There in America. Yes. It's like that. But people, because people are looking in the right place, they're trying to find happiness. But they're thinking that I will find happiness by accumulating material things. Prabhupada, our spiritual master, he told a story about one man. It was a night like this. He drove into his garage. Maybe around this time. It's completely dark. He got out of the car, dropped the keys. He turned on the light. It didn't work. So he's just in darkness. He fumbled around a little, trying to find the keys, couldn't find the keys. He looked out the door, and he saw, out on the footpath, on the pavement, by the road out there was a street light. So he thought, let me look there. So out he went, and he's looking now just on the edge of the street by the gutter. And one of his friends drove by and saw, here's my friend fumbling around, crawling around, and something's wrong. So he stopped and said, what happened? Man said, yes, dropped my keys, trying to find them. So his friend said, let me help. Where did you drop them? Man said, up there, in the garage. And his friend said, but why are you looking out here then? He said, here there's light, and I can see. So it's a simple little story. But the principle, it's correct. Even though it sounds silly, who's going to do that? Only some idiot. But the principle is there. They're looking, but they're looking in the wrong place. It can be found. It's there to be found. It's not that hard. But you have to look in the right place, and if you look in the wrong place, don't be surprised if you end up, if you fail, first of all. And don't be surprised if you end up kind of frustrated and, a bit disturbed that you're trying hard but you can't find it. Don't be so surprised. That's what's going on. Otherwise, there'd be a lot of really happy people even around Chatsworth. But people, they're sort of struggling away, getting by. Yes. Yes, it's like that. So, this is actually the great contribution of India. India has made many contributions to the world. Currently, India is contributing, I don't know if you're aware, but India is now a leader in the sort of certain aspects of the computer business. Bangalore making these software programs. It's a big thing. It's a very big thing. Did you know that India is the biggest manufacturer of bicycles? That's a contribution. It's not a very exciting contribution, but it's something. But actually, in terms of like a meaningful contribution, something that the world needs, and something it otherwise is not getting so much. But to give Bhagavad Gita and to give people the opportunity to change their lives and to change themselves and improve themselves and improve their lives and in these ways become happy, and much happier than through sitting, watching Dallas, or, what is that called? Canned heat, was it? Tropical heat. Tropical heat. I never saw it. I never saw it. But you know what I did? My father passed away in 1996. In New Zealand, so I just before he passed away, I went back to see him. And he was in the hospital, and it's like a geriatric hospital. So then I went. There he was, and he was just sort of in an unfortunate state. Basically, it was practically all over. So he couldn't really communicate, but he had the TV on. So I walked in. I was trying to speak to him, but we weren't really getting very far. So then I just sort of, my attention got caught by the TV, and I just sort of noticed it. And then I saw, they had the interlude for the commercials, and the title came up, The Bold and the Beautiful. I thought, oh my God, is this it? Finally, I'm seeing The Bold and the Beautiful. I must admit I wasn't terribly impressed. Or, even something from Bollywood. like Kuch Kuch Hota. Or the latest, I was in Bombay in March, and you know, driving around here and there, and so they have these big billboards all over the place. It's just, you know, so overdone, and advertising different movies. But the one that really struck me was Chori Chori Chukka Chukka. Exciting. Anyway, look, you know, with all due respect to Kuch Kuch Hota Hai and all that, you know, even though it's India, but that, you know, it's kind of like a little bit lower grade, isn't it? You know, what really gets me, you know, what really gets me in these Bollywood movies, the hero, well, they're always about boy meets girl. Or there is a variation. Girl meets boy. But that's it. So what really gets me is boy and girl. You know, they're having their happy time running around together. So they run off into the garden, into the sort of little forest area or something. And it's all happy days, and you have all this sort of thing. Suddenly, 50 dancing girls come out of the forest. Oh, and an orchestra is suddenly there. And 50 dancing boys come out. So, it's just a bit silly, really. It's either that or the Bold and the Beautiful. But really, we should aspire to something a little higher. And India has that. I think we should really aspire for something a lot higher. Yeah, something which will help us and improve our lives. So if we try to cultivate, here Krishna is describing the Mahatmas, the great souls. So to become a real Mahatma, that's a big thing. No, you don't just stand up and say, okay, now I'm going to be a Mahatma. That's a big thing, to be a real Mahatma. But at least anyone, even actually Prabhupada said here, we read, that anyone can become a Mahatma, actually. But at least, even if you don't become some big spiritual, outstanding spiritual person, something like that, even if you don't become that sort of big spiritual person, that's okay. But if we can at least apply these principles, how come these people are Mahatmas, like Gandhi, or so many, the people that Krishna's referring to here, how come they are Mahatmas? How did they get to be? And now that they are, what is it that keeps them like that? Special people. Well, that is what Krishna's explaining. And if we apply those principles, then even if we don't become some big, big Mahatma, but at least we can improve our lives and improve ourselves and improve our families and be happy. Be much happier than just being absorbed in consumer society. So let us just see. Krishna says they're under the protection of the divine nature because they're fully engaged in devotional service. Because they're serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead, their activities are always connected with Him. So they are connected with Him. And just like, you know, if you plug something into the electricity, if you connect it, then electricity flows. So if you connect with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then His spiritual influence will flow into you and into your life. It's not so hard. And then he says in the second verse, You know, it's like the main activities that those Mahatmas perform. He mentions three or four. First is, the Mahatmas are always chanting my glories. They're always glorifying Krishna. We are glorifying people. You know, in India, it's really quite a thing, the way that people glorify two categories. One, the politicians. Two, the movie stars. It's quite amazing. You know, I don't want to get into Indian politics, and I don't know even if you're aware of these things. But a few days ago, you know this lady Jai Lalita? You know who I'm talking about? Well, it's good if you don't, actually, because of... She got Jai Lalita. She's a famous politician. But she got convicted last year of fraud, corruption, bribery, millions. You know, big thing. And it was, you know, big thing. Now, a few days ago, she got elected to become the, what do they call it? Like the governor, the chief minister for Tamil Nadu. What can you say? Just last year, convicted, bribery, fraud, corruption, and she was accepting the bribes for millions. And she admitted it and got convicted. Now, she's elected to become chief minister. It means, you know, it means we got a problem. We got a problem. So people like to glorify, one, the politicians, two, the movie stars. Do you all remember when Amitabh Bachchan came to Checkers Center? You remember that? We were there in the temple, I was there. And he came. And the whole of Chatsworth came also. Everyone, from Mobini to, you know, probably Marion Hill, and everywhere, you know, from Silver Glen over this way, everyone was there within 5 minutes, and you could not move. We could not drive out of the temple. And Bhakti Churu Maharaj, if you know Bhakti Churu Maharaj, we had to take him to the airport. And I don't know what we did, but somehow we got him there. But we were, the whole of Unit 5 in that area was just bumper to bumper motor cars in the middle of the road, anywhere, you know, anywhere and everywhere. Anyway, Amitabh Bachchan, he's actually a nice fellow. And he's quite a close friend of our movement in Bombay. So, you know, but, he cannot really help us. He may be a nice fellow and clever in his acting back in those days, but he cannot really help us. But Krishna can help us. So he's worth glorifying. It will help us if we glorify him, if we give our attention like that. Because we are prone to glorify people. We become impressed and we glorify. Nelson Mandela. I remember this one chap, Makani, died a little while ago. When Nelson Mandela first came down, he announced that he is just like Ram. I think it's overdoing it. I mean, Nelson Mandela in his own way is also kind of a nice guy. Just to a limited degree. Yeah. But, you know, you compare him with Lord Ram, I think he's sort of, you know, it's a bit excessive. But Krishna, Ram, they can help us. They're worthy of being glorified. They're worthy of being glorified. you know, Krishna appeared 5,000 years ago. Still, people are glorifying him all over the world. Like on Janmashtami, millions, tens of millions or hundreds even, they come and worship and glorify Krishna. 5,000 years later, I go to Russia, and in every town and village, in the town square, there is a big statue of Lenin. Everywhere, everywhere. And on his birthday, they bring flowers, they put them at his feet, people get up and make speeches and all that. And then they go home in the late afternoon. And then you know who comes to continue the program? The pigeons. And for the rest of the year, till next year, it's mainly the pigeons. But on the morning of his birthday, the municipal street sweepers come with their big heavy brushes and buckets of water, and they scrape away the different offerings of the pigeons and then, you know, make everything a bit spick and span, and people come with flowers and it's Lenin PJ. And this is only, you know, he died, I don't know, 100 years ago or less, 85 years ago, something like that. But Krishna, he was here 5,000 years ago. But still, it's a big, big thing. Very big. So that's because if you do it, you get something out of it. You glorify Lenin. Might as well leave him to the pigeons, you know. I mean, effectively, that's what they think. But Krishna, if we glorify him, if we worship him, we get something out of it. It benefits us. It improves our lives. It improves us. Yes. So, the Mahatmas do this, and we should also do that. Always chanting my glories, endeavoring with great determination, bowing down before me. These great souls, these Mahatmas, perpetually worship me with devotion. So we would like you all, you're all nice people, you know, in your own ways you're all sort of pious and spiritually minded people, that's very good. So we'd like you also to try and follow in the footsteps of the Mahatmas. And first thing, like Krishna says, satatam kirti yantana, always chanting my glories. So we'd like you all to chant, just like Mahatma, Mahatma. It's two words combined. Mahatma becomes Mahatma, great soul.